Beijing often cites the economic developments in Tibet to justify their policies. How would you evaluate the current situation in Tibet? Is Tibet and Xinjiang getting more alike?
That is the problem with the Beijing government. They don't understand the aspiration of the Tibetan people. For Tibetans, for more than 1,300 years, we practice Buddhism. So it is the peace in the mind that is more important than external facilities. Of course, external facilities are also important. Development is also important. We are not against development. But development alone does not bring peace of mind. So you have to have both development and also peace of mind together. So those two are not forthcoming. So that is why China fails in looking after the welfare of the people, not understanding the needs of the people. Because what people need is more freedom to think, to express themselves, and to go where you want to go. Material development is there, but then there's too much surveillance now. Every movement of yours is watched. So how can you live? How can you have peace of mind when you are controlled through electronic surveillance, and China uses the best instruments to control not just the Tibetans, but also the Uyghurs or the Mongolians, or within China itself, the Chinese people, whether it's the Falun Gong or the Christian believers or anybody who supports democracy in China. So we really hope that the Chinese leaders will have the intelligence to understand people's aspirations and try to fulfill them instead of repressing their aspirations. Once they start fulfilling them, then they will understand that people like leaders who take care of them. You know, if you try to repress all the time, how much ever you do like this, whatever form of happiness you try to show, but inside you are not happy. There is no respect for the leadership. And that is why that this question always comes up as to why is China the only country who spends more money on internal security than external security? What does that mean? It only shows that there is no trust between the ruler and the ruled. If there is trust, why do you need spend so much money on internal security to curb down on people? That is not necessary. No other country in the free world spends so much money on internal security to repress their own people. If you spend all that money on education for development of other things, that could be more useful than put pressure on people all the time. That is not useful. I hope the Chinese leaders understand that.
What are the most concerning policies of Beijing that it's imposing in Tibet right now? And what are the most important things that you think Beijing may need to do for Tibetan people afterwards?
Beijing needs to implement what is there in the constitution and the national regional autonomy law that guarantees the nationalities to use their own languages. Right now, there's too much curb on language, which is at the very bedrock of national identities. Now, even from Montessori school, you have to learn Chinese. Tibetan language is just reduced to one language. Even if you are very good in Tibetan, you don't get jobs. So the language issue has become very, very important. And then more and more students are being sent to boarding schools. And when the Chinese spokesperson is asked about this question, he points the finger at the United States as how they treated their own natives in their history. And then they also point finger at Canada and say how they treated their First Nation people in Canada. They know it's wrong what the U.S. did, and U.S. government and the Canadian government are now making up for all the mistakes they made in their history. And China is making the same mistake in China, with the Tibetans, with the Uyghurs, with the Inner Mongolians, and again, to some extent in Hong Kong, in restricting their freedom. So where is it leading to, one can imagine? When there's too much restriction on language, then another generation, maybe 10, 15, 20 years, there will be less number of young Tibetans who speak Tibetan language, because they're speaking only Chinese language. Then they lose their roots. That is one issue, one big issue that concerns Tibet. And the second issue is, again, freedom of religion. Why do the Chinese government have to keep so many security, public security bureau or the United Workfront Bureau or from the Intelligence Bureau to manage the monasteries? Why does China talk about Buddhism with Chinese characteristics? Is the Communist Party follow the teachings of the Buddha? No, they don't believe in religion, so they don't study Buddhism. Then how can Buddhism have Chinese characteristics? Because Buddhism came from India. Our language also came from India. Our religion came from India, just like Buddhism went from India to China also. So religion is very, very close to people's, even as an individual, in spirituality also. It's your right to believe in what religion you want to believe in and practice what you want to practice. But unfortunately, as I said before, Chinese government failed to understand all this. And then, of course, the environmental issue of Tibet that concerns not just the Tibetans, but the whole region, including China. The Yellow River originates from Tibet. The Yangtze originates from Tibet. And major rivers that flow, the Mekong that goes into Burma, Laos, Cambodia, Thailand, Vietnam, and Irrawaddy that goes into Burma, the Brahmaputra or the Tsangpo that goes into India and Bangladesh, and the Indus that goes into Pakistan, all these rivers originate from Tibet. So some people claim that some 2 billion people in this world have directly or indirectly dependence on rivers that originate from Tibet. And China does not share any hydrological data with any of the downstream countries. And there have been enormous number of damming inside Tibet. So it's like a water tap, it's like a water tank that China controls on, off. If they don't want the downstream water, countries to have water, they block it. And when they have too much access, then they throw it downstream. And then there are also plans, we were told, that there are plans to build a big dam in what is called the Great Bend when Brahmaputra takes a south turn towards India. This is supposed to be twice the size of the Three Gorges Dam. And the whole Himalayan belt is seismic zone. So if something happens to the size of that dam, what will happen to millions of people who live in India and Bangladesh? That could be catastrophic. Because if Tibet's plateau is destroyed, if there's too much climate change on the Tibetan plateau, ultimately Chinese people are going to suffer. Because Yangtze feeds millions in South China, and Yellow feeds millions in... These are the two big rivers, lifelines of China. If these are also destroyed, then what will the Chinese people do? So it's very important that Chinese government give a lot of importance to the Tibetan environment.
What are the specific concerning things that Xi Jinping has done for Tibet since he came into power? Is the assimilation becoming more aggressive in his tenure? And do you see Tibet's position in his China dream?
With Xi Jinping, it's one nation, one culture, one language. So that is aimed at eradication of the national identities of all people, including Tibet. So that is very, very alarming, that he's accelerating Sinicization of the Tibetan people, of the Uyghur people, of the Mongolian people. So we really hope that he understands the importance of multiculturalism. The whole world is multicultural. The whole world, people are going from place to place. So cultures cannot be restricted, because every single person has a culture with him or her. So that cannot be restricted. So how can... I don't know what is going on in President Xi's mind to turn everything, even Cantonese, into Mandarin. So it's difficult for everybody. How do you want... Do you want to turn every single human being in China into a machine? That is not possible. So he should rethink on this idea of assimilating everything and signification of all the minority nationalities. That is not going to work. It's not possible to work. So he should rethink on this and, on the other hand, give importance to the culture and language and religion of the nationalities so that people can be more free, people can be more happy. And that is what everybody wants, whether you practice communism or Buddhism or Christianity. Ultimately, what counts is happiness and peace of mind. That should be understood by the Chinese leadership.
Do you expect the situation might be worsening if Xi Jinping gets his third term? It seems like his portrait can be seen more and more in more and more places in Tibet, such as in monasteries in Tibet.
On one hand, communism does not believe in idol worship or any kind of religion. But on the other hand, then you have so many posters of Xi Jinping everywhere. And at one time in Tibet, it's not just Xi Jinping, from Mao Zedong to Deng Xiaoping to Hu Jintao, everybody, all leaders are put in monasteries. So does that mean to say that they want to be worshipped? If they want to be worshipped, then they should forget communism and do something else. You cannot impose your will on the people. People should have the freedom to believe in what they want to have. So if you are kind to the people that you rule, if you are nice, being nice to the people that you rule, you don't have to put posters. You don't have to impose your posters on people. People will take your posters and put it in your house, just like we do with the Dalai Lama. So Tibetans everywhere, you go to any Tibetan home, His Holiness never tells Tibetan people, put my picture in your home. People put because they have respect for His Holiness. They have belief in His Holiness. People in China, people are forced to keep Xi Jinping's photographs. So next time you should ask Xi Jinping whether he wants to be worshipped by people. If he wants to be worshipped, then he should behave well himself rather than being repressive all the time.
Could you describe to us the frame of Tibetan policies in the U.S. from both the administration and the Congress? Anything that you would urge the Biden administration to do for Tibet?
No, we have been saying the Chinese propaganda is too strong. They have both the human and financial resources to try to change people's mind on the history of Tibet, to tell the international community that Tibet has been part of China since time immemorial. So China will have to define when time immemorial is. So therefore, I think we need to change our narrative for the nations to understand that Tibet historically was an independent country. So that needs to be specified because Chinese propaganda is too strong that everybody believes Tibet must have been part of China for many centuries, which is not really the case. So unless we do that, and why does China keep telling other countries that Tibet is part of PRC? Because they know they don't have the legitimacy. So they are trying to get legitimacy from the international community. And when the international community also says that, they are going against international law on one hand. On the other hand, they say we support negotiation. These two are contradictory. If you support negotiation, then you have to understand the historical status of Tibet. And there is nobody who can give legitimacy over Tibet to the Chinese, neither by China nor by the international community. If it is one group that can give legitimacy to the Chinese government, it's only the Tibetan people. So if the Chinese government listen to us and try to seek a solution based on the middle way approach, then only will there be attraction. Then there will be a reason for the Chinese government to come to the negotiating table. That is what we are trying to impress on the international community.
His Holiness the Dalai Lama says Tibet does not seek independence from China but wants greater development. How about for the younger generation in Dharamshala? Do they hold similar ideas or favors the ideas of independence given what's going on in Tibet right now and Beijing's Tibet policy? And are they optimistic about the future?
His Holiness' position, the middle way approach, is the most pragmatic position, most realistic position, because there is a threat to the annihilation of the Tibetan culture if we don't get to go back to Tibet. That is the main reason why His Holiness went for the middle way approach. Economically, we can gain from the Chinese. Religiously, Chinese people can gain, because you mentioned about a lot of Chinese people having interest in Tibetan Buddhism. So that is why we keep saying mutually beneficial. Beneficial for the Tibetans as people and beneficial for China as a nation. That's why the middle way approach is very, very important and very in accordance with the reality of the situation in Tibet and in tune with the reality in the world. And the reason and the fact that the middle way approach is based on nonviolence is the need of the hour. We all are watching what is happening in Ukraine today. And I feel very sad that these things are happening in 21st century. People are being killed and we are all watching with feel so helpless. So maybe if this war goes on for too long, maybe all of us civilians should go to Ukraine and see whether Russia will be able to do that on all the civilians. That's a shame to the humanity in 21st century. But as for the younger generation of Tibetans, there is a lot of frustration because there is no positive response from this. I don't blame them also. Everybody can feel frustrated if you don't get what you... even when you propose a very pragmatic or take up a very pragmatic position. So that's very unfortunate. But if there is a solution for Tibet in a non-violent way that is beneficial also for the Tibetan people, I'm sure the younger generation of Tibetans will also understand the reality of the situation.
What was your dream as a Tibetan child growing up in India? Do you feel that you are closer to your dream now?
That I cannot say for sure, but we remain to be hopeful, because without hope, then there is no struggle. As a child, I used to listen to my parents, and when we left our country in 1959, our parents never thought that we may have to live in exile for that long. At that time, everybody thought we can go back in 2, 3 years, 4, 5 years, 10 years. Now it has been more than 60 years that we are in exile. So I cannot say for sure we are closer, because the response from the Chinese government is not that positive to resolve the Tibetan issue or the Sino-Tibet conflict. But we can say for sure that now we are much more aware of the situation and we are much more capable of handling the situation than before, because most of our younger generation are now educated and they know how the international community works and how to leverage situations. So I can say for sure that now we are much more capable than before.
How have Tibetans' decades-long activism inspired other groups in the world to fight against tyranny, especially in regards to Uyghurs, Hong Kongers, and Taiwanese? How could the influence be?
Fortunately for Tibetans, we have leadership like His Holiness the Dalai Lama. At one time, many of our Uyghur friends used to say, Tibetans have head, no body. Uyghurs have body, but no head. So we have a leadership in the form of His Holiness the Dalai Lama, and we are very fortunate. And he has the benevolence towards his people, and he always thinks for the welfare of his people, and he always has a very futuristic vision, not just for the Tibetan people, but for the whole humanity. So that, I think, message and that value is very important.